Hey, this is Scott from Fort Worth, Texas, and here's the best true crime podcast anywhere. You're listening to Gangland Wire. Now here's Gary and Aaron.
On the advice of my lawyer, I respectfully refuse to answer that question, as my truthful answer may tend to incriminate me.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, folks. Welcome to Gangland Wire. I'm here with my good friend Aaron in the classic old Ice House building. Say hello to everybody, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Tonight, folks, we're going to do a kind of a special show for one of our supporters. One of our supporters, a guy named Andrew Barrett, he suggested that we and requested we do a show on the I-70 killer. And I don't know if you know who the I-70 killer is, but it's kind of an interesting story. But, Aaron, you know, on that, we did that whole special donate episode that one night. You know, and I created a donate page, and we're not really going to ask you all for money tonight. We've done enough of that, folks. But Aaron, tell folks what you get if you donate certain amounts of money. And I don't mean in prizes either.
There's a couple ways to donate. One, you could actually subscribe to our Patreon to make like a monthly payment, $2 a month.
Right.
But you could do, I think with all these gentlemen that were kind enough to help us out, including Andrew Barrett, made the extra special one-time donation, where you, for a $10 donation, you get to be a mob associate, and you get two extra episodes, and we'll give you some protection. And for a $25 donation, you become a soldier, or as they know it in the La Cosa Nostra, soldato.
Right, he's like a made guy.
Getting five extra episodes, copies of the Villa Capri and the Breckenridge Inn wiretap affidavits, the actual affidavits. You get a copy of affidavits signed by Tokyo Joe Ken Ito, who in court identified Chicago outfit bosses, and a DVD, of course, of Gangland Wire, and protection from other known mob guys who may have made a donation.
Yeah. See, that's important. It's easy to protect y'all from other criminals.
We got to protect you from...
But if you want to be protected from another made guy, you're going to need our protection.
Yeah, another mob associate.
Another mob associate or another mob member even. You got to be a soldato. You got to be a made dude. And you can be a made man or made woman, I guess.
You could. We don't discriminate.
We don't. You know, it's a kind of a male-dominated organization.
The Sato Capo. If you want to wet our beak, for $50, you get a copy of Leaving Vegas, the book, not the digital copy, but the actual hard copy book, which came out in January.
And I'll send you a digital copy too. Also, I just got that worked out, so I can
you
do
can
that
do both.
Now. I can do both. I'll do that.
Because you can't actually listen to the mob guys talking.
And on the digital book, you're going to be able to listen to them. They're linked to all the wiretaps at one place or another in that book. You'll see the transcript inside the book and explanation of it, but you'll be able to link to it and actually hear him talking.
And I think Gary would actually autograph that book as well.
Sure.
Or maybe he won't.
The paperback.
Yeah, the paperback.
When I send you the paperback, it'll come autographed.
He's not going to give you his...
It'll have a huge thank you on it.
He won't give you his digital signature.
I don't know how to do that.
But you, of course, also get the five extra episodes and all the protection from anybody but... our friends at the FBI.
Right. That's kind of hard to protect you from the FBI.
Yeah.
But we'll protect you from the Chicago outfit. We'll protect you from the five families in New York City.
Don't make Bill Owsley mad.
Really.
We don't want to have to ask him not to take care of you for the FBI.
Now, that's what we call a sado capo, or a capo regime, or you will be the boss of a crew.
Now, above that, for a $100 one-time donation, you get to be a don. And, of course, you get a Gangland Wire coffee cup and all of the above prizes, plus an underlying our underlying gratitude. Be a guest on the show or phone call during the show, and total protection from the cops.
Oh, man, can I do that?
And rival families. I don't know if we had any rival families.
We could probably protect you from local police. I don't know if we can protect you from the U.S. Attorney's Office or the FBI.
No, from local police.
Local police, okay, yeah. All right, people, all right. Like, I can do that.
Like maybe, I don't know, Troy Cole.
Troy Cole, yeah.
We can protect you maybe from Troy Cole, Tommy Robinson.
Tommy Robinson, Joe Langer.
Joe Langer. That, yeah. You know, so
just, Jim Pater up in Chicago, Chicago PD.
Yeah, that's right. If you want to be the capo di Tutti Cappi.
Right, the boss of all bosses.
Capo di Tutti Cappi.
That only cost
am
you...
I pronouncing that right? Because I feel very like a Peckerwood here.
It doesn't really roll off your lips and doesn't roll off of mine either. Some people it rolls off your lips. The boss of all bosses.
Yes, $500.
You get all those prizes and our undying gratitude. And
you say here that we will provide you with bodyguard services.
Right. If you want to go out some night, I'll go out and I'll bring my gun and bring a black limo and bodyguard you.
And I'll bring the force, because that's about all I'm packing. Sometimes you can turn an entire crowd with just this voice.
Just this voice.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand back.
Stand back.
Clear the exits.
See, I mean, man, you haven't made for one evening.
These aren't the droids you're looking for. I don't even have to wave my hand.
So that would be, help us out, folks. Now, we're not going to keep belaboring this. I know you don't want to hear from us, keep begging money all the time, but it would help to produce our third season, which is coming up. We're going to take a little bit of a hiatus, a couple of weeks maybe. We may not put anything out. And so we can come back strong in sometime in the 1st of March. And so if you don't get one to come up one week, don't worry about it. We'll be back.
There's plenty of there that's available for free.
There's plenty of old ones there for free, yes. And there's 106, I think,
now.
Seven now out there for free.
Now, we were fortunate enough, like you said, we were talking about the I-70 killer tonight because of Andrew Barrett.
Right,
and
exactly.
Andrew Barrett didn't just suggest that we talk about the I-70 killer. He also put his money where his mouth is.
He did, Mr. Barrett. We appreciate it. He is my friend, and we will be in touch.
And he is a capo.
And he's a capo, yes. He has his own crew.
Turns out there's another capo.
Yes, I know.
Chris Shoup.
Thanks, Chris.
Chris, thank you so much. We need capos because we're trying to run some crews here with Gangland Wire. Rick Turner came on board to be a soldier, a soldato. Thank you, Rick. Do we have to assign him to a particular crew?
Well, let's see.
Would he be part of Andrew Barrett's crew?
He should be part of Andrew Barrett's crew, thinking of the geography located here. He would be part of Andrew Barrett's crew. So, Andrew, you need to get hold of Rick Turner whenever you need something done. Why, you get hold of Rick and you send him on the job.
And, of course, if you need any protection from any of these other folks that may become capos, soldatos, or dons, like Myrl Watson.
Right, Myrl Watson. Now, he can be the don of Andrew Barrett and Rick Turner. So you guys all got to kick up to Mr. Watson.
And what we're going to do, and we're going to make you all happy. Because that's our job.
That's our job.
Here at Gangland Wire, is to bring you riveting original material.
One more thing.
From the mouth of the men that did it.
Aaron, it just came in. I just looked down at my email. Jonathan Drummond. Of the United Kingdom, Perth, United Kingdom. You know, we've got several fans in England and Australia and New Zealand, I think Sweden. We've got one. I had a guy from Sweden. I need to look him back up who messaged me, I believe, or tweeted me that he said, thank you for putting out Gangland Wire. It makes my day livable when I go to work. It makes the day go by or something like that. But anyhow, Jonathan Drummond, and he is a soldato. Now, since he's in England, we're going to have to get some more people from England to form a whole family over there. So you guys in England, Listen up.
What we really need is a capo to run.
We need a capo.
The crew.
A Don. And you probably need a boss of all bosses. So
Over in England.
So for $500, you know, you can be the boss of all bosses in of all England. And we're going to provide you with a whole family.
We can set that up for you. All we're asking is that you wet our beaks. And what we're going to come back with is words from the mouth of the men that did it.
That's right.
Week after week. Gary Jenkins, of course, one of those men.
I did do it.
He didn't just write the book. He made the book. He was actually there back in the 70s. Now, other folks that we've gotten a chance to talk to that you can listen to for free, Troy Cole, chief investigating officer for the Bob Berdella case. If you don't know about Bob Berdella, that's all right. Go listen to this. Google search Bob Berdella. And there's a lot of stuff out there, but what there's not a lot out there from is from the men that did it.
That's true.
Troy has been on a hiatus, I think, from talking to the press largely since the early 2000s when the book came out. So that's very unique. And, of course, the guys that we talked to, Tommy Robinson, the police officers we may be able to provide you protection from.
And Joe Langer. They worked the case on Richard Grissom Jr., who killed three women in about 2 weeks' time and hid their bodies, chased him down the Gulf Coast, down by Corpus Christi.
Ended up in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, that's right. They did. Actually, they tricked him to come up to Dallas. That was a pretty interesting story. You guys need to listen to how they captured this guy up. It's really a funny story.
And I don't think they've actually talked. Have they talked to anybody?
No. We're the first people in.
First people.
And then,
you know, of course, some criminals, you know, like Craig Glazier, the King of Sting. And Martin J. McNally, who was on the cover of the Riverfront Times here in the 17th, I think it was, of January.
Yeah, he was.
Sent us both an autographed copy.
We're the only people he's ever talked to this crime publicly that is out there for anybody to review and listen to him talk about it. It's I was told it was some of the best true crime journalism that this one guy had ever listened to. So you got to go back and look at the D.B. Cooper copycat series. There's seven episodes in that series, and it's compelling as hell. I had another guy get hold of me and said his wife was calling him in for dinner, and he was trying to listen to one more episode. And he said, wait a minute. She said, are you coming or not? He said, I couldn't quit listening.
And we hope you don't stop listening. Tell your friends as well. If you're a true crime fan and you know other folks that are fans of true crime, because, you know, there's a lot of true crime out there these days. But there's not a lot of it from the mouth of the men that did it.
That's for sure. There's a lot of people out there that read Wikipedia and repeat what they read out of Wikipedia, or just go online. And I do some of this. Go online. I research some cases outside. But we also try to do stuff out of my experience or out of actual people who either lived at one side or the other. His experience. I've got a guy out of Dallas, lives in Dallas now, but was a professional burglar, wrote a book called The Burning Bar that he's kind of put aside. And I've been working with him, helping him figure out how to do self-publishing. And as soon as he gets the book done, he's got the file. As soon as he uploads it to Create Space to Amazon, he gets it self-published, and he's going to come on and do
a phone interview
with us. He's an interesting guy. He really ran the same circles I did back in the 70s, only he was a professional burglar that used what they call a burning bar to bust into safes all over the Midwest, and finally caught a case and decided that he'd apply his talent somewhere else, and has become really successful.
As an author?
No. Hey, this is his first book. He's become successful in other business. I'll leave that up to him, how much he wants to reveal. He's a little nervous because he's not in Kansas City. He's a little nervous about revealing how much of his background that might come up in his particular business circle. But it'll be a great interview. I know he wants to come on because he wants to promote his book, of course, and you know, he wants to tell his story. And he has a really fascinating story.
Well, that's what we really want to hear about. And I think that's what the listeners of the Gangland Wire want to hear, is those fascinating stories from the mouth of the men that did it.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too.
Red Wimette comes to mind.
Oh, yeah, we had Red Wimette talking about another guy that was a criminal in the criminal element. I don't know if you'd call him a criminal. He had a kind of the gray area. He had a porn shop back in the day when porn shops were anymore. You can probably show anything and do anything. But back in the 70s, it was a little bit different. And so they had, you know, had those peep shows in the back of rooms of the porn stores, and they took in millions and millions of dollars. And of course, the Chicago outfit, they wanted their piece of his action.
Yeah, that's a lot of quarters to carry out.
Well, he had to cash in the quarters and give Joey Lombardo or Frank the German Squeeze the cash money every week.
You don't think he would just go, there's a big bag of coins. Guys.
No, he would not.
You want to count that here or take it with you?
They would be slapping him around all over the place, and he knew that.
Well, you know, the point is, ladies and gentlemen, go listen and let us know. Subscribe, share, and support us as you can, be that financially or just by giving us a comment on the iTunes. Saying,
really?
Hey, I love what you do.
You know,
send us an email.
And if you don't want to, you don't feel like you can afford to send us any money, you don't want to mess with it, that's fine. Go on to Facebook, find my Gangland Wire Facebook. And when I put up something about a podcast, share it. And then try to get somebody else to share it after you share it. Because the more you share it, the more people that see it. And the more people that see it, the more listeners we're going to get. And the more listeners we're going to get. One of these days, we'll quit asking anybody for any money. And we'll just do a little 30-second commercial or 60-second commercial that's here and gone. And everybody will be getting it for free. You won't have to listen to this crap. All right, Aaron, let's...
So if you're an advertiser, think about that.
Yeah,
you
really.
You could easily... We're easily bought and paid for.
We are.
We're still looking for dons. We're still looking for soldiers. We love our capos. And now we're going to talk about an episode that was inspired by one of those capos.
Right, let's get into this story. We've bored them enough with our stuff.
I'm going to actually start the timer almost over here for another 30 minutes. So okay. they get their money's worth.
All right. Aaron, this I-70 killer, I kind of had some vague memory of this, and I'd forgotten about it. Andrew, he remembered all about it. I don't know if he, you know, knew somebody, maybe, because we had one of them was killed here in Kansas City, or if he just thought it was an interesting story. And it is it's an interesting story without any, it's not ever been resolved yet. There's one man who has been responsible for shooting and killing six people in five different Midwestern cities during the months of April and May of 1992. And four of these crimes were committed at strip malls that were right along I-70, which runs from, you know, back east, and, you know, in east of Indiana, really, and all the way through to Topeka and goes all the way to Denver. And I think maybe, I don't know if it goes past Denver or not, but he didn't go out of...
That goes up over the mountains through to...
Does it? Salt Lake City, that's right.
Well, it actually doesn't quite... It goes pretty straight out through the mountains, and then comes out the other side, Grand Junction, and then you kind of head into Utah. And normally if you're going to Salt Lake, you take like another angled road that'll shortcut it. Otherwise, you end up kind of in the middle of Utah.
Okay. Anyhow, they... And there's something that links them all together other than the M.O. or the modus operandi. And these murders were all conclusively linked after one of the homicides happened in St. Charles, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis. He found that there's a .22 caliber firearm, which was used, and it was used, a .22 caliber firearm was used in all the murders. The victims were all petite young women with long, dark hair working alone in some kind of a little strip mall store. They were all robbed, but the robbery was probably secondary in nature because there was hardly any money taken out of them. There were all these, like one was a bridal supply store. I mean, how much money a bridal dress store shop? How much money are you going to have in a bridal dress shop? Everybody's going to use their credit card and checks and things for that.
I would wonder if they, you know, what day of the week these crimes occurred on. I think I remember I had done a Google search when you mentioned the I-70 killer.
Yeah.
And I saw what came up was the St. Charles. incident.
And that's the one that's got the most publicity.
I was thinking, was that the same I-70 killer? Because apparently there's been a number of freeway, you know, shootings.
Well, these were all linked. These particular crimes were all linked. The first one was in April of 1992, April the 8th, in Indianapolis, Indiana. 3 days later, on April the 11th, there's one in Wichita. And that one, there was two victims, but that was just an accident. There was two victims. Normally the lady, that was a bridal shop, the lady that was working there, the owner had come back in for some reason, and she was there when the guy came in. Then 16 days later, after April the 11th, there's one in Terre Haute, Indiana, April 27th, 16 days later. And then 7 days after that, it was May the 4th in St. Charles, Missouri. And then 3 days after the one on May the 4th, there's one on May the 7th in Kansas City, Missouri, or actually a suburb of Kansas City, known as Raytown. They all had exactly the same M.O. There was some witnesses to this.
It says here, you were writing that all the victims were alone while murdered.
Right.
And shot in the back of the head.
Exactly. Execution style. Now, the one on April the 11th in Wichita, that's the La Bride d'Elegance bridal shop, and that's one where there was two victims, Patricia Smith and the store's owner, Patricia Majors. Normally, that owner was not in there at that time, and for some reason, she had came back in to check on something. When the guy came in, well, he had him in the back, and he may have already killed him. We don't know for sure, and what was interesting about this one, And there's some really good artist depictions of this guy out there. A male customer came in to pick up a cummerbund for an upcoming wedding. And he is confronted by this man, and the man's got the gun in his hand. He holds the guy for a little bit, and the guy starts begging and pleading, offering him money or whatever he can do. You know, just let me get away. I won't say anything. I won't call the police. And he lets the guy walk out, and the dude leaves, and you know, somehow he disappears into the night.
What, and he never called the police?
Yeah, he called the police. Yeah, he called the police, but he immediately notified the police, but they gave him a composite sketch. But, you know, just because you call the police and it takes another 10 or 15 minutes for the cops to get there, if you ever called the police, you know how long it takes for them to get there sometimes. You get but that 911, or all lines are busy right now.
Yeah.
Please do not hang up.
Yeah, I mean, this was 1992.
Right.
So he may or may not have had a cell phone.
Probably not. 1992. I'm trying to remember if I had one in 92. I think I probably did by then. A lot of people had cell phones.
If nothing else, he would have to go out and go somewhere else to find a phone.
Find a payphone. Of course, strip mall, there's going to be a payphone. There's probably another store open. More than likely went into another store. You went running there screaming, call the police, lock the door behind you. Please help me out. There was one man killed in this, which was unusual, and you'd think it would break the pattern, but the man had long, dark hair that he had in a ponytail, and it looked like he was bending down, maybe with his back to the front door, and the killer just walks in and shoots him in the back of the head. So he probably thought he was shooting a woman. Might have been one of those, what's that song? The dude looked like a lady. Might have been kind of a slender guy with
long hair.
With long hair back in a ponytail. Then in May the 4th, Nancy Kintzmiller. Oh, actually, that man's name was Michael McCowan. 24-year-old Nancy Kintzmiller on May the 4th in St. Charles, Missouri, was working in the Boot Village, a footwear shop, and she opened up the store at noon, was found dead by customers about 2:30 in the afternoon. You know, a lot of those little shops would not be unusual for nobody to come in the store for an hour or two. I don't know how anybody works in those kinds of places. I can't even imagine sitting around for hours not having anything to do and nobody to talk to. May the 7th, 1992, the last confirmed murder was out here in Kansas City area in a suburb, Raytown, Missouri. It's 37-year-old Sarah Blessing working in a gift shop. It's called the Store of Many Colors. They had a witness that day. The owner of the video store next door to the Store of Many Colors saw the guy enter the store, heard a pop, and then saw him leave. So he immediately goes in the store and he discovers Ms. Blessing's body. And there's another guy, a clerk at another grocery store, happened to see the suspect. They call the police, and, you know, they do a what we call an area canvas and walk around and ask if anybody saw anything. And so they got some composite sketches of the suspect then. It looked like the same guy, and we know for sure it was. I'll tell you why in a minute. And he was last seen just walking north at 63rd and Woodson, and that's not right off of I-70. It's about 3 miles south of I-70. But Kansas City certainly is a city that's along I-70. There were all stores or cities that were along I-70. It was like somebody, you know, had some reason to go up and down I-70. Who knows? They said this guy, another thing they said about this guy, he was dressed like, here is like a sport coat and slacks and, you know, kind of a decent shirt on, which I don't know. I guess you never know what a serial killer will dress like. You know, Ted Bundy, he always looked nice and had casual clothes, but clean and neat and well pressed, and had a particularly nice demeanor. He could lull them into
false sense of security.
Yeah.
Well, here in your notes it says none of the scenes had any sign of sexual assault as a secondary motive, as all the stores were small specialty stores, which would not have had which wouldn't have had as much money as some of the larger stores.
Right, and the robbery was a secondary.
But he didn't. There was no sexual assault. I mean, if he was robbing the stores for, I'm assuming it's a him, from the descriptions.
It's a man.
That he would figure out after a while these little specialty stores don't have a lot of money on them, and maybe change up his target. So maybe, you know, like they say, the robbery was sort of secondary.
Right. Now, the reason we know, and what's unusual about this, and the best clue that anybody has, is the gun. Now, if you knew anything about ballistics, that you know that you could many times, just from the, they found the bullets inside of the corpses on this. It was a .22 caliber, so it's not going to, like, blast on through And the killer didn't obviously take time to dig out the bullet. So you're going to get the bullet. You're going to look at the rifling on it, and you'll be able to figure out probably what kind of gun it is. And the police in Kansas City, and I know the firearms guy here in Kansas City said that it had to be an Intratec Scorpion pistol or an Irma Werke ET-22 pistol, the really unusual guns. And money is all on from the other firearms examiners on this Irma Werke, which is a German gun. It's made by, looks like a German Luger, only it's only a 22. German Lugers are usually like 9mm or something. And the ammunition used was also interesting. It was unusual in that it was 22 caliber copper clad lead bullets, but the cartridges, which are not that unusual, but the cartridges had all been polished with a jeweler's rouge. Now, how they figured that out, when they dig the bullets out of the people and then they examine them under a microscope and they see there's some kind of substance on that bullet that did not come from the body. For example, it's not tissue.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go through any clothes, for example, so it's not something from the clothes.
When they pull the round out, they can tell that it was 22 eventually. They could see the rifling to try to figure out what kind of gun it was.
Right.
And then when they do close-in examinations, if there's any, you know, maybe because the bullet was being handled by, you know, your bare hand, would they be able to get DNA or
other
materials?
Yeah, possibly. They didn't get DNA off of it. They got this jeweler's rouge on it. I wonder, what's the deal with
what's
that?
What's a jeweler's rouge?
What is it? I know. Okay. Here's what it is.
I thought a jeweler's rouge was when they told you that the diamond was 50% off.
Really? Yeah, that's a ruse. It's used, jeweler's rouge or red rouge, or there's another name for what they found on there's called corundum, and it's used for fire lapping a weapon. And what that does is it's you dip your bullet in that, and then you fire the bullet. It's called fire lapping. It means that when you shoot that bullet with that abrasive compound that's on the lead bullet, when it goes through, then if there's any kind of imperfections or burrs or anything, whenever they created the inside of the barrel, the rifling in it, it will make it smoother, and supposedly the gun will shoot smoother and shoot better. Now, this kind of gun, this Irma Warke gun, everything I could find out about it, it tends to stovepipe. It's a semi-automatic gun, and it tends to stovepipe. So, you know, you can shoot one round, and then unless you manually activate the gun, it's no good. It's not good to go on the second round.
What do you mean? Stovepiping meaning?
Oh, you know, that's right. You would know. Stovepiping.
Yeah, this is another one of these cop terms.
Yeah, really. Well, stovepiping in a semi-automatic, a lot of you guys out there, I'll bet, know. Stovepiping is when the semi-automatic ejects the old cartridge out, which is the, you know, the part that has the powder in it that's expended the powder and shoots the lead bullet out the barrel. Then it automatically, the explosion from that automatically forces the mechanism to go back about 3 inches, and there's an opening there, and it kicks the bullet out. Well, if there's some problem in the gun, it won't go back far enough, and the empty shell will just sit there and partially extracted, looking straight up, and the mechanism will come back and hold it like that, so it looks like a stovepipe sticking straight up.
So the empty cartridge spins up, and because it gets clamped when the
right
when the thing returns,
it just spins up and doesn't go out, and so then the mechanism returns back to shove the next bullet in. Well, it just locks up against the old shell, which hasn't spun out of the gun onto the ground. And if you go,
that's notorious for the particular.
It's notorious. If you go online, you can find a lot of people on some of these discussion groups on guns that when you search for this Irma Warke ET-22, they all complain about stovepiping and they can't get it to do it. So maybe this guy thought that if he fire lapped it, it would work better and not stovepipe. I don't really know, but I mean that's my best theory. But it's the same guns used to murder all 6 shop clerks. We got another story we're going to do one of these days about a same kind of a situation where a guy was going around and used exactly the same gun here in Kansas City to kill clerks in the shop. But we caught him. We know who he was. I worked that case. That'll be a good one.
There weren't any other murders similarly in other places in the country?
And there was some down in Texas, but they didn't have the same gun. So, but there were similar MO, but didn't have the same gun. So I don't know for sure. When you got the same gun, you get somebody with that gun. Now, what the police are doing and what they have done is they're trying to get information out to gun collectors and gun dealers and like these message boards and the people that discuss guns and ask about during in 1992 or just before, did anybody sell one of these to somebody? Did anybody buy one from somebody shortly thereafter or sometime after that? Does anybody have any idea? It's such an unusual gun. There's not that many of them out there, although I noticed you can buy them out there for, I almost say, like $300, $300, $400. It looks kind of like a German Luger.
But you can buy them from an individual and right. You don't have to exchange a license of any kind.
Right, yeah, as long as you got it, as long as they're dealers, the only people that have to do the background check and send your name in for a background check and give you a 3-day waiting period. If you buy them from an individual or at a gun show, you don't have to do any of that. This Irma Warke company was formed in 1922 by a guy named Berthold Geipel. And he made these kinds of guns. He made German Lugers and all kinds of guns like that for the Nazi army. And after the war, he was arrested in prison by the Allied occupation forces in Germany. And he was eventually freed. He was denazified, as they say. He went after the war. He was in the Soviet occupation zone, and the Soviets ordered what was left of Irma Warke Company to be liquidated. Geipel eventually reestablishes the Irma Warke Company in Bavaria in 1949. In 1952, he moved to Dachau near Munich. His son, Geipel's son Rudolf, became the chief engineer of the new company and started making household appliances. But eventually they got back to what they knew best. They got a contract by the West German government to service and produce parts for various Allied forces weapons that had been supplied to the German police. Eventually he gets around and he makes in 1955, he develops a new submachine gun for the West German police and the West German army, although it wasn't much of an army. They really kept the German army. If you notice, there's not a big German army presence even today. But they wanted to replace the weapons that they'd been given by the Allied forces with German guns. And, you know, German guns today are the deal. And Irma's design outbid and outperformed any submissions made by Walther. They couldn't last. In October 1997, the Irma Working Company commenced on bankruptcy proceedings. In 1998, was taken over by the Steyr Company, Steyr Mannlicher Company. Now, if you're a gun person out there, you know what a Steyr is, S-T-E-Y-R. That's a pretty well-known assault rifle that looks like a machine gun, one of those many rifles out there that look like a machine gun. So anyhow, that's just a little aside. Main thing to help anybody find this person, we can find an Irma Werke 22 caliber pistol that looks like a German Luger. And there's a flyer. I'll put these up on my website in the show notes on my website, a picture of the gun and a little bit more about it, why you can help solve this crime.
Did they get any witness descriptions?
Yeah, besides finding the gun, I mean, they've got three people who could, you know, probably pick this guy out, hopefully. They've got composite sketches out there. The physical description of the I-70 killer is a white man in his 20s to 30s. At that time, 1992, that would make him about 60 now, 5'7" to 5'9", tall and thin. He was described as having lazy eyelids, kind of droopy eyes, if you know what that means. I have some picture in my mind what droopy eyes are. He had sandy blonde or reddish hair back then. He dressed kind of like normal, like I said, with the one time they spotted him with his clothes. He had a sport coat and dress slacks and nice shirt on. Nothing really out of the ordinary. But we do have people that could pick him out, hopefully. Or if he looked like any of those composite descriptions, you could at least dig into him a lot more and maybe go serve a search warrant on him and find that gun in his house. These kind of guys, they usually don't, they keep souvenirs. Probably there's something out of each one of these crimes that this guy's got. Of course, you know, he may be dead by now. He may have gotten killed in something else or got put in jail for some other crime for a long time. Well, this brings me to my public service announcement. If you have a friend or relative with a drug or alcohol problem, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I got to say, if you got any information on the I-70 killer, send us an email or post a comment.
That's a good idea.
Ganglandwire.com. And then remember to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. Take your own personal tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City. And then you want to go to Amazon and buy, not just rent, the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, available for streaming and available as a DVD for a $25 donation. Also get Gary's book, Leaving Vegas.
Get the ebook. That's what I recommend. I make a little more money, and I've got it on my website on the paperback, and I'll send you an autographed copy. But get the ebook, I think, really, and you'll be able to get the copy, the paperback, and then for another 99 cents, you'll be able to get the ebook.
And the great thing about the ebook is you actually get to hear the audio from the mouth of the men that did it.
Exactly. I've never, ever read another, especially a true crime book like this, where you get the policeman telling his interpretation of what they're talking about. You get the transcript of what they're talking about, the crime, how they're going to commit them, what they're worried about, what they're not worried about, how mobs deal with each other, what's the protocol on, you know, Kansas City. Can they contact Lefty Rosenthal without asking Joey Iuffa's permission? Their codes for their, when they go back and forth and they fly around, the codes that they use for their different airlines. And then you can hit a link and go right to a website that will then let you hear the actual person telling that same story.
You can read it. You can listen to it.
from the real people. You're just not reading about, you know, something that happened a long time ago. This is the real people.
This is from the mouth of the men that did it.
All right. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Bumper music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Twitter at Odd-O-Matic Music.
Have anything to say,
anything
sir?
At all, sir?
I got nothing to say. I got nothing to do with this.
Folks, if you're still listening, you know, every once in a while, I have a little secret show at the end of these. If you ever find the secret show, why... Text me. You can text me.
That
if
would
you
be
want.
A secret show if you gave out your phone number.
Well, I'd give it out to you.
You actually do if you need legal advice.
816-931-3535. Text me, call me, whatever you want. But message me on Facebook or through Twitter or email me at ganglandwire@gmail.com and let me know that you heard the secret show. We'll give you a shout out on the show that you let us know you heard the secret show. Because we have a little bit of fun afterwards. Sometimes we're just sitting around here shooting the breeze about, you know, what our next show is coming up, what we think we ought to look at or listen to, or maybe some other outtakes from the show when I edit some things out. Always be kind of fun. I don't usually edit a lot out, but I'll edit some things out. One time, I tell you what, I did edit out. I didn't put it in. Red Wimette told that story about the guy that claims that he killed Marilyn Monroe. I elected not to put that in. It's a little bit far-fetched for me.
It's a little off topic.
Well, I mean, he's a mob killer. It was Frank the German Suisse. Yeah, and allegedly. He tells this story to Red Wimette that he actually is the one that flew out to California, Los Angeles, California, and killed Marilyn Monroe for Sam Giancana, I guess. And it was something about trying to protect JFK, I believe. I have to go back and listen to it. I'll stick that in one of these days. It's a pretty interesting story. That's out of the mouth of the man that at least he heard it from somebody else who claimed he did it.
Yeah, I don't know what to say if that would, you know, I wouldn't necessarily argue with the German either.
Yeah.
I'd go, oh, right, sure you did.
Well, the Germans did, but I wouldn't argue with him at the time. I know Red wouldn't have.
Let me see your airline ticket.
You know Red didn't do that. That guy was nuts.
No, he's like, just face towards the television set.
Yeah, just look over here.
You sit here.
Smile.
And I'm going to always sit here, but you sit right, you know, so you have a good view of the television set. But you'd have to go on YouTube and see the video to understand what we're talking about.
Right, the Red Wimette videos. And, you know, I'll tell you what we did here in Kansas City one time, Aaron. We had a sting. What that means is we set up a storefront in an old body shop, I think, over on the east side, and where you could had an office inside, but it had a big garage door you could pull right in. And they were buying stolen property and started putting the word out and got a couple informants who were, you know, professional criminals. And they started telling their buddies about, hey, these guys are paying top dollar for used stolen cars and stolen auto parts and about anything you want to bring in. So they wanted to always get their picture. And if you remember back in, this is in the 70s, you remember the Farrah Fawcett poster with her wearing the kind of a orangish red bathing suit.
The one piece.
Every boy of a certain age will remember the Farrah Fawcett poster. Well, they put the Farrah Fawcett poster up high where they would always, sometime of half the time when they were there talking to the guys that were acting as clerks and were buying the stolen property, they'd be glancing up and looking up at the Farrah Fawcett poster, and that's where the camera was. So they'd get a really good full face shot of him. Nobody ducked away from that one. Men are so predictable, my wife would say.
And you're just behind there clicking away.
Yep. And probably had a video. I don't think they used video back then. It's kind of interesting. I was the first one to use video in our unit, intelligence unit. You would think we had the camera, but nobody wanted to use it. They were all, I don't know, they were technically challenged, just like the old people today that don't want to use the cell phones or don't want to figure out how to use the internet.
Well, the video camera, I mean, while it would be good because you could get the, you know, the video image, you would probably have no sound.
No, there wouldn't be any sound. No.
Still images, but.
Right. But the good thing about video.
Like a bad, you should have used the same ploy, the same tactic. You told a story in one of an episode where we were talking about surveillance episode that was going on at a car lot down off of like Warnell and south of 75th.
Oh, yeah. And we were,
you were in a cemetery.
Shooting pictures out of the cemetery.
With a setup like you're digging a, you know, like how they dig the hole for the actual
right,
casket that, to go in for 2 or 3, 4 weeks.
Well, that was about 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
We left the tent up there for about 2 weeks.
That's not suspicious at all. You might as well just put that, you should have put that poster of Farrah Fawcett on
really,
the outside of the tent just to get him to look.
That would have made it suspicious.
Wait, 2 weeks?
Did
you move the tent around at all?
No.
No, just stayed there.
Aaron, you'd be surprised. People, all they really, they don't question a lot. They just need something that just seems to fit in.
Yeah.
And if it fits in, it's not like an anomaly. Like a poster of Farrah Fawcett on the outside of that pinch, that tent would be, oh, what's that? That's unusual, but the tent was not unusual. They didn't pay attention to it. Nobody paid attention to it.
So then you had to, you set up shop next to where they had their shop.
Yeah.
Somewhere down the street, but you had a good view.
Yeah.
And then you had a window.
Now, that was at the Virginia Tavern. Yeah, we shot that out of the Virginia Tavern, right straight down into that. That's the one where we got the city to, we asked them to come along and trim the trees. And they came along and they cut the tree down and they trimmed every other tree for 3 blocks along there.
You weren't specific enough.
Well, they did their job, didn't they?
Well, but you had the Farrah Fawcett poster up in the window facing out.
No, we didn't. That was at the Sting.
Yeah. But I'm saying you had this Farrah Fawcett poster in a window.
Yeah.
Facing outward.
No.
That's not unusual.
We didn't do that. What are you talking about?
You said you had used a Farrah Fawcett poster.
No, you're not. You're going to a whole other case now, man.
Yeah, I was.
At the Sting operation and inside the garage up above the counter where the clerks were, there was a Farrah Fawcett poster and people would look up.
Okay, and you put the camera there.
There was a camera put up there, yeah.
Okay, in their actual operation.
Right,
okay.
Right.
I was thinking you were like somewhere down the street.
No.
And then
you put
this Farrah Fawcett poster in the window so guys would look at it.
No, I guess you could do that. But that would draw too much attention, yeah.
But actually having it, so you black bagged the job.
And no, we owned the business. The whole business was owned by the police department.
And then you just rented out to these guys?
No. Everybody that worked there were policemen working undercover. You rent a Sting.
And then the people would come in and go, oh, I heard you guys are buying car doors.
Buying used cars. I mean, stolen cars, buying stolen auto parts, buying stolen anything. They were buying stolen anything.
Anything.
And it's called a Sting.
Yeah, and then so the guys would come into your shop,
and you'd get them to brag about where they bought it or where they stole it,
and then check out the Farrah Fawcett poster.
And check out the Farrah Fawcett poster, get their picture, figure out who they were. You wouldn't ask them their name. You just have somebody out front get their license plate and maybe follow them a little bit. If you had somebody that was a regular repeat customer and you still couldn't figure out who it was, you'd have somebody follow them a little bit and get them 20 blocks away and then call a uniformed policeman, get him pulled over and just, pull him over for a fake traffic violation and get their ID. And so then you got him identified. And then eventually you just keep that property and eventually you figure out where it was stolen from. So then you got a auto theft or a theft report, and then you've got them selling stolen property. They took down, I don't know how many people, they took down like 100 people after about 6 months of doing this.
They ran it for like 6 months.
Something like that. I was thinking
what you were talking about at the beginning was there was these guys that had a shop and they were buying stolen stuff.
Right.
And so then you get, the clerks there that weren't, I didn't know, they didn't realize it was, they were the Sting. They were the cops.
They were the cops.
I was thinking, you're surveilling this operation.
No.
If you will, going, we're getting, identifying who the people are, what's going on, not actually. It's actually an undercover cop behind
the
counter.
Right, and they did a good job. It kept it so secret that, we had one young gung-ho policeman who got a street informant that said, hey, these guys over here buying stolen property out the ass. So he starts running his own little surveillance. He even comes back in on his own time in his own car and starts running surveillance, picking up tag numbers and trying to see what was going on. And they saw him down the street and somebody says, hey, what's Dusty Rhodes doing down the street, man? He said, he's just sitting there all day long. And so then they go back to when he comes back to work, they say, hey, dude, how come you're over there watching that? And he said, he said, I got an informant says they're selling stolen property. So they take him into their confidence and actually took him off the streets and gave him a job helping him out.
Because he was actually surveilling their...
He was surveilling the
sting.
Undercover sting operation.
Heard about it.
Yeah.
And what was his name?
Dusty Rhodes. I don't remember his real first name.
Dusty Rhodes. That's a good cop name, isn't it?
It is. Anybody's named Rhodes, they nickname him Dusty. Had you ever heard of that one before?
No, I did not hear that one.
That's like a big, heavy guy. They'd call him Tiny.
That's right. So the password for the extra episode beyond the regular episode is Rhodes.
Rhodes, yeah.
And what's the answer?
You tell me that you got the name Rhodes. We know that you're listening to the secret show.
You got to tell us Dusty Rhodes. What's... I know. Well, I'm just recording it. Can stop.
Yeah,
I'll
cut it.
I'll make it feel a little more like...
I don't want to try to end it. Let's just cut it.
Here, you do this again. Nope, not that.